This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your
I'm
pop culture
alone,
world.
With my head on the phone, thinking of you till it hurts. I know you hurt too, but what else can we do? Tormented and torn apart. I wish I could carry your smile. Times when my life seems so low.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am your co-host, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
It's a wonderful day, isn't it?
It is wonderful. You know, we just passed up a lot of people would say it's the time for some loving.
You know, all we do is just talk negative. Mostly me, but you know, you sprinkle
I'm
in a
pretty,
few.
I'm pretty negative. I got a little negativity.
It's time we just have one episode. We just talk about things that are nice, things that are good. Let's just be happy for a little bit.
You think we can manage that for like about 45 minutes here?
We'll give it a shot. We'll
It's gonna start with really. It's gonna be really hard, especially when you get into the middle of the NBA season because everybody's mad and coaches are getting fired. And I don't want you on my team anymore. I want to trade you. And, you know, you got a lot of ill will going on.
Yeah, but I think we have enough. Let's just baby small increments, 10 minutes of positivity. Let's just try that and see how we can do.
Give me something that you're loving about this year already. It don't even have to be basketball.
This season, wow. I am liking the lack of Western dominance, the lack of, well, the ninth seed in the West could beat anybody in the East. I like how it's even now. I like how you have parity in the league, and there's teams that are getting better. The Knicks, how everybody thought they'd be terrible, they're actually showing potential. Porzingis looks good. It looks like they're, you know, you have all these young players and the teams.
There's hope. There's actual optimism.
Yeah, it's not just, well, it's all the West and, oh, the East is all horrible, and how are they going to, we should just make one 32-team league and get rid of the East. And no, now it's you have the West. They're starting to go down, and you're seeing, you know, the Celtics have just been overachieving. You have, like, a lot of teams who are doing better than we thought they would.
But before I get into my spiel here with our categories and such as we do our Valentine-themed episode of PTPN's NBA Team Podcast, is your wife the kind of person, because you're married, is your wife the kind of person that if you don't send a Valentine card, you will hear about it the next day?
Oh, no. That's... Nope.
My wife will tell me something if I do not send a card or flowers.
No, but I mean, she'll get a card because it, you know, takes literally 3 minutes to find one, but it's not like, oh, I need to get you some fancy thing, because we do stuff throughout the year, and I've sort of taught her the every day should sort of be, you should be glad for things. Every day you should be happy and, you know, sort of a Valentine's Day and Thanksgiving and just be cheerful and not just everything sucks. You know, worry about the important things like going on vacation in 2 months, not, oh, work sucks. You know, everybody has to work. So, you know.
So among our about 500 listeners, maybe less, it might even be less than that before the show's over. How many of them would you say are married? Or have a girlfriend?
One
girlfriend?
We are a wrestling podcast area, so...
Oh, watch what you say. In fact, no, don't. Just keep going.
Oh, there's... I say we have listeners of all varieties.
Okay, and where can they buy flowers if they had to... You just get an emergency one through 1-800-Flowers or somebody like that. Could they click on the Amazon link?
They could click on the Amazon link for some nice chocolates or a nice wrestling, you know, Valentine's Day DVD.
I don't think I've ever bought flowers on Amazon or through a shop, like a flower shop. Is that the way that they do it now? When they send it to their work, they do it online now?
Oh yeah, I do that online all the time.
Oh really?
Yeah, it's just but it comes next day guaranteed by... It's really weird. Like, you can only order in a certain window. Like, you can't be like, I want to order flowers in July. It's like, no, you have to order them like a week in advance.
Well, because of the fact that they're going to go... Like, the ones that they want, they might not have them in stock by the...
Yeah, but it's just annoying. It's like, well, I'd like to... We'll send you a reminder. I'm like, well, then that loses the spontaneity of it all for me, but...
Are women gullible enough that anybody can buy a card and flowers from any place like a Walgreens or any place like that, and they'll be just as impressed? Or do you think women are vindictive enough that they know when they see good flowers and when they somebody's actually taking time to buy one?
No, I think flowers are flowers, and as long as they're there and fresh and not dead and not, you know,
yeah, don't send your wife dead flowers.
You know, or you can see they're already wilting, and it's like, well, they have one day to go, and we could tell you got up at the gas station on the way home. It's, you know,
it'd be brutal if you sent dead flowers to your wife and you had a little card saying, I want a divorce.
You know, I've gotten my wife flowers from Walmart, and I've gotten them from, you know, a fancy floral shop in town, and they're just happy to get them. But, you know, as will it fool people? On Valentine's Day, no, because that's what everybody expects you to give them. That's why, you know, hey, it's March 15th or whatever. Here's some flowers. Then you get all her co-workers jealous because nobody's expecting that shit.
But I hate the really lame catchphrases. Those I can't stand. Like, I don't know. Like an orange candy says, orange, you glad to see me.
Well, yeah, but the whole holiday, the whole day is, it is what you, you know.
I hate holidays in general. The only thing I like about holidays, like for example, I live in Louisiana area, so we celebrate Mardi Gras like you had, you know, when you were down here. So we get Fat Tuesday off, and a lot of people look around like, what the hell is Fat Tuesday? And it's like, that's the day of Mardi Gras. Everybody's off. You know, it's kind of like Boxing Day for Canadians. Everyone's like, why are you off the day after Christmas? Well, it's Boxing Day. You know?
Yeah, everybody, every state has their own little, Massachusetts has their Patriots Day or something. And
yeah, like I've never heard of that in my life. Like I don't know.
Yeah, and I think Rhode Island still celebrates Victory Over Japan Day, which is like, okay, time to kid us with the times. And yeah, everybody has their own little things. And that's why, you know, how many, you know, you don't see too many people actually getting married on Valentine's Day because it's just too cliche. And everybody, you know, every state has their own holiday. That's why your anniversary day means something to you, because you picked that day specific as opposed to, oh, let's get married on the 4th of July or Valentine's Day.
My cousin was married on Valentine's Day, so we had to drive out to Mississippi for that one. It has its advantages, I guess. And you know why it's okay to do it on Valentine's Day anyway, not just because of the whole love theme, but because of the fact that it's not the most important holiday in the world. You know, you can probably get away with taking a day off and not miss a lot of stuff. Whereas if, you know, for example, my daughter was born 4 days before Christmas. Do you have any idea how hard it is to schedule a birthday party a few weeks before Christmas?
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Plus, you know, then eventually you're just going to get lazy and be like, oh, here's birthday and Christmas gifts.
Well, what you do is you have to do the birthday party a good week or two before the actual birthday.
Okay.
And so she gets three of them. She gets the birthday party, the real birthday, and Christmas. So now she gets three of them.
Yeah, you're not setting her up to be spoiled, are you?
You know, just holiday or no, artificial or no, we still have things to celebrate throughout the day. What you're celebrating here is that, you know, to top it off, of things that we just flat out love about the NBA this season, you like the fact that there is actual legitimate even playing field between the East and the West this year. That's
and
balancing
games are
out.
Watchable.
Okay.
It's not just what you have. We have six teams. We could only watch those six teams. They're the only good ones. No. Now we have depth in the league.
So you like the fact that the Orlando Magic can go to Oklahoma City and give them a hell of a game?
They used to. Now they've sort of fallen apart.
Well,
but
they had that one a week ago where Durant had to hit a game-winning three off of an Ibaka block.
Yeah, the, you know, again, any team, that's the, you know, the old any given Sunday type thing. Now it's sort of coming back in the NBA where you have to watch out for sort of anyone outside of a couple teams, but we're positive, so most teams.
Well, there's talent everywhere in the league. We can probably make the argument there's more talent in the league now than there's ever been. Could you? I mean, I know the dream. You know, the parameter is always, for me in that case, is like the Olympic teams. You look at the Olympic teams, that's the best of the best. How good were the best players? And if you look in 92, obviously that's the dream team. The early 90s, late 80s, you just had like a treasure trove of talent in that area. And then when you look at the years after that, not so great. But if you look at the last few years, it's really, really picked up steam. Would you say that the talent level in the NBA is peaking again?
we are almost there. There is more potential in the league than there has ever been. And now it's the changing of the guard. Now is the out goes the Kobe's, the Paul Pierce's, the Dirk Nowitzki's, mm-hmm. even, you know, slowly even Dwayne Wade's are going away. And you're getting this whole new crop that's replacing. And there's a lot more of them than the superstars that are leaving, as opposed to like the NFL. Once Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and like a Drew Brees go, there's no QBs to take their place as the media superstars.
There's Johnny Manziel,
who is
media superstar.
Media superstar. But, you know, there's not that talent in NFL as there is in basketball now, where this youth movement is coming in, and you're seeing each team again is having their own superstar.
Well, I think what's going on in the NBA too is that they've had like three or four youth movements since 2007 or 2006. Like, we're at a point where it seems like, Adam, every two or three years, there's like a wave of about three or four really good players that come into the NBA. You know, you got a Wiggins and I'm trying to think of another one who had won the Rookie of the Year around the same time. And then before that, you had Anthony Davis and Damian Lillard. And then before that, you had John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. And then before that, you had Chris Paul and Deron Williams. It's like, you know, and eventually a lot of these players, they evolve, they peak, then they go into their twilight, and they don't always overlap with the other players that I had just mentioned. But, you know, it's we are at a point now where they're all kind of congregating at the same time. Kobe's not gone yet. Garnett's not gone yet. Paul Pierce isn't gone yet. Their time will be coming soon, but they still have a little bit to offer. You get that little snippet of them interacting with these other young guys that are coming on up, which creates some interesting matchups. You know, the Spurs haven't given up yet. I mean, the Spurs are at a point where their infrastructure is so solid that they'll probably never take a step back. But Duncan's not gone. Ginobili's not gone. Parker's not gone. You know.
No, but you know. That's I think that's my thing I like about the NBA.
What I'm in love with the NBA, I'm gonna tell you this, I was against it thoroughly for quite a while because I thought 3-point shooting was sort of a disease when I first saw it sort of explode in the late 2000s. But as I've watched it and as I continue to see these offenses try to evolve a little bit, I really do love pace and space. I do love the fact that teams have figured out how to use the three-point line as a weapon, as a way to build teams from the outside in instead of the inside out. I think that it's created a absolute surge in scoring. You know, we're at 101 points a game. It's the highest scoring that they have for team average in almost 20 years. I don't think that's a coincidence. And the three-point shooting is higher than ever. A lot of people would call that repetitive and predictable, that everybody's kind of running very similar offenses, try to get open threes. I do think that defenses are still pretty sophisticated in trying to stop some of these offenses. It's just that I think we're at a point now, though, where, you know, we always talked about in the 90s with Pat Riley and the Knicks and, you know, the Bad Boy Pistons, that we just got to a point in the NBA in the 90s and in the early 2000s where defenses were just ahead of offenses. And now I think we're at a point where offenses are ahead of defenses. And it's actually pretty fun to watch.
It is fun to watch, but we're almost to the point of overkilling it. Because you're at the point now, you're having every center shooting threes and everybody's just lining up beyond the three-point arc. Now is we're good because we still have offensive still being run. And you still have a Cousins who put up 50 points. You'll still have, you know, double-double machines in this paint, but, you know, eventually you can't just have, well, let's just all shoot threes and, you know, sort of like the Hawks did. Let's have four three-point shooters and one person sort of standing under, hoping, you know, get the rebound.
Well, the other thing, too, is that, you know, a lot of people said this back in the days when defense was the name of the game, and you had guys like, you know, the late Anthony Mason, who was a really good player, though, smaller-time players like a Jerome Williams and an Antonio Davis, you know, guys that, you know, in another era probably would have been effective in different ways, but because of the fact that they were defensively predicated, it worked to their strength, so they got more prominence than they probably would have in different eras, you know. And it's kind of the same way with – and this is my question to you. Are we in an era where having really good offense regardless of the players, it sort of hides the talent of those players because you're asking them to just basically do, hey, you be a 3 and D guy. Hey, you be a stretch 4. You don't have to do anything more than that. Do you think the fact that they've simplified these offenses so that they can try to just find open shots and turning the players into kind of interchangeable parts, do you think that's sort of hiding their talent?
Yes and no, as I always say. Yeah, it sort of hides the talent. They become a system thing, sort of like, you know, Duke, where, well, the players, you know, hide each other's faults, and then once they're exposed, then the whole thing falls apart, and that's why none of them really succeeded in the NBA. But at the same time, you're weeding out a lot of fringe players. Well, if you can't play D, you're no good anymore. You need to be, I need you to be that 3 and D. I need you to be that, you know, Jay Crowder, Damari Carroll, big guy who can get out to the three-point line and try to stop that shot and still hustle and play D. So it's given birth to this new player who had gone unnoticed to this point. And then you just get, well, you know, you have these kids coming in. Well, I'm just going to shoot threes and be the hero. Well, if you can't play D, then what good are you? Well, then that's why you don't see them in the league anymore after their third year has been declined.
Now, let's be honest. In the 80s, nobody played defense. And the ones that did play defense stuck out like a sore thumb, like the Bucks when Don Nelson was there for a while and the Pistons with Chuck Daly. But it seems to me, Adam, like the defensive game plans are sophisticated enough that they really do know what they're doing. And playoff games obviously slow down where you do have to play defense, and defense does, you know, become an important part of winning the games. But are we at, the one thing is I watch the regular season games. It doesn't even seem like they're trying to play defense sometimes.
No, because they all, everybody knows you don't try till the postseason anyways. And
yeah, but it didn't stop them in the other years where they were super physical and everybody played defense. And, you know, the Pistons were on a streak where they were giving up less than 70 points a game and things like that. I mean, you know, at what point are we going to be where people are just not, like, teams are just not trying on defense at all? Because it just seems that way to me in the NBA. Even though you see all these charts and all these graphs and all these analytics about how to stop this guy and how to do this thing and all these game plans and all these millions and millions of dollars that they spend, you know, for defensive assistance, it doesn't seem like not a lot is stopping these teams from scoring.
Well, I think that I think that it's changed from we need to, you know, just slow the game down and have defense to more of we need the steals to be up. We need quick hands. If they shoot, well, we expect them to score, then we'll get the ball back. But we need to get to the point where they don't shoot, as opposed to, well, let's just grind them down.
Even
they sort of wear the clock.
Even the Pacers and the Spurs, two of the slower teams, said, you know, we've got to shoot more threes. We've got to do this in order to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah, they're doing, but like I said, it's more quick hands this time as opposed to slowing, you know, if you shoot, you shoot. Okay, we shoot a three, that sort of, yeah, like, I don't know, I'm sort of backtracking mid-sentence because, I want to defend the type of defense has changed.
Well, that's why efficiency is so important now. You know, I wasn't a big believer in it for a while, but now I've realized, you know, especially in college basketball, it's super important because the scoring is so low, is that you can only use you have to use efficiency now to compare the, you know, from year to year, because now if you look at defenses, you know, if you just look at, you know, points allowed and points forced, you know, the Spurs are, I think, are at number one at like 91 points per game. But if you looked at those points per game compared about 10 years ago, that's actually not great at all. You know, but the thing is, like, the defensive efficiency with the number of possessions and how many turnovers you force and how often you foul the other team, it shows that the Spurs' defensive efficiency this year is actually one of the best of all time. You know, but it wouldn't show – that doesn't show based on, you know, just looking at the raw data. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it has become a more – really super stat niche cat, you know, NBA world now, where you can break down the breakdown to the breakdown, as opposed to back then it was just, well, here's your rebounds. That's all we're going to judge you on.
They would show you box scores at the press conferences. Now they give you like a fucking binder.
Yeah.
And you see that in football too. Look, what's the first thing the quarterbacks look at when they do? They used to just look at this little book with the radar. Now they look at these Kindles. where they just have like every freaking picture and every chart and every percentage and everything that they can, everything that they need at their disposal to know how to improve on the next drive. I don't want to call it an ADD culture, because it's the fact that I think it's just simply more information. Just the fact that there's more information clouding up people's minds and making them second guess their game plans.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
This is a long story short. Let's get out of this topic. Let's do the Lloyd Dobler Award. Lloyd Dobler is one of my favorite characters from the movie Say Anything, portrayed by John Cusack. He's playing In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel, and he's holding the stereo over his head. As the Ione Sky is at the window. Just anybody who hasn't seen Say Anything, please go see it. It's a great movie, especially with the Valentine week, coming upon us. And I'll say this: let's. How about you and I be Lloyd Dobler, and we have an NBA player at that window. Give me a player that you want to love you back.
Oh, who did I pick? I have already forgotten it. did I pick Hassan Whiteside?
I think you did.
I just completely just went blank right there. Yes, as a Celtics, I don't need another player, another stretch four or stretch five. I need somebody who could just get down there, rebound, and block shots. That's why you hear the talks of them going for a big man, and every year it's, well, what's the problem? Well, they can't rebound. They get out-rebounded. And, well, Kelly Olynyk's doing good shooting threes. No, I just need somebody who's just going to sit down there and doesn't care and just, I'm just going to block shots and rebound. I'd say, Cauley Stein, in a few years, maybe he's a little young. But I like a nice Hassan Whiteside, just an old school center. Whoa, everybody's getting away from that. Everybody needs the 6'7 Draymond Green. No, in playoff time, it slows down tremendously. You're not going to be shooting threes all day. So I would say I want somebody just the old school, legit center.
So this is kind of like the be mine. like in the event that if you needed somebody, this is the guy that you would want.
Yes.
But let me ask you this: is there a reason why Hassan Whiteside doesn't love you back?
Because he has many problems, and B, he likes his situation where he is. Mm-hmm. He's just, there's zero expectations on him being the fourth banana. I think he's sort of roaming around doing everything he is because nobody really cares about what he does.
Mine's interesting. I could probably use him in a different category that we'll talk about later. But mine is Kemba Walker with the Charlotte Hornets. And the reason why is because I think he works great as like a third banana, like you just said. Like, I think Kemba is a guy that if he was your third best player, you might have an NBA championship team. And he's got the intangibles. He had a 50-point game earlier this year. He followed that game up, I think, with a 40-point game. He's got the ability to score in bunches. He's a leader. He's not scared. And I don't think his lack of size, hurts him. His shooting percentage still has a little bit of work to be done. But I almost want to make the argument that he's Charlotte's best player. Would you say it's him or Batum?
Well, Batum has been the best fit.
But you would say Walker's the best player.
Yeah, by default, because there's really nobody else on that team right now.
Still a playoff team, though. Still hovering there.
Yeah, so why doesn't he like you back? Because he is the top banana there?
And that's exactly why. Because he's in a situation where he's the guy. They rely on him. He's at 20 points a game. He averages 4 rebounds. On what other team is Kemba Walker at 6'1 going to be able to snag 4 rebounds a game? Nowhere, because that's where they rely on him the most. He's their one of their top assist guys at 5 assists. They rely on him, and him being a leader, all the way back to the UConn days when they won it all, where he was the main man. So he goes to Charlotte, and he's kind of built himself a situation where he's the main man. I think he would be a great fit as the one of the other guys. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, and he just signed a new contract there. So, in the case of a trade, it would be difficult, because you would have to, he signed that extension before the money, the cap exploded, but you'd still have to find a way to make it fit, if you were trying to build like a super team. But if you were trying to build a super team, I think Walker, it fits right in. I think he's just a really – I think he's a much, much better NBA player than people give him credit for.
Okay. Fair enough.
Did you have any other ones that you were thinking about that were in that window?
No, because the Celtics have – you know, we got lots of three-point shooting. And
I'll tell you what. I think Danny Ainge would be the guy holding that stereo waiting for some superstar to come out there.
Danny Ainge would just be, you know, renting a plane, the Skyrider saying, be mine, and just dropping leaflets to everybody.
What is it with Danny Ainge and the fact that he just feels like he's compelled to make a trade?
Because you see teams having, they're buddying up, and you're just not going to have a bunch of no-name players like the Detroit Pistons win a title again. Yeah, and even I would say.
Well, that was Trader Bob though. Are you talking about the Pistons in 2004 or the
2004? I'd even say the Mavericks, which is Nowitzki and.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the way that things have come, you need a third and fourth banana, and you can't get that second banana if you don't get that first banana. So he's trying.
You need to get a lot of bananas.
Yeah, so that's just like, you know, Kevin, like Morey in Houston. He's, you know, every time he's blown up his team trying to get that third superstar. And, okay, I blew it up for Hart, and I blew it up for, you know, Howard, and I tried to get Aldridge on top of that. And you know,
I feel like Daryl Morey's lost his values there. I feel like he got away from what he made work in Houston because he knew that that money ball approach was only going to get him so far. And he basically said, okay, I need a star. He got desperate. You know.
Well, I think it worked once for him, so he just kept trying and trying and trying. And the same thing with Mark Cuban. Every time he tries to lure the superstar and gets left at the altar.
But here's the thing with Danny Ainge. It's not only worked once for him, it's worked twice. Because he was able to swing the trades for Ray Allen, and then he got Garnett to – he convinced Garnett to come over in, you know, a couple of months later to get shipped out of Minnesota. But then, you know, everything was doom and gloom after Doc Rivers left, and he hired Brad Stevens. It turned out to be an inspired hire. You know, made a trade for Isaiah Thomas, worked out great. Do you think Ainge is kind of rolling the dice, feeling like he's kind of the hot man at the craps table?
No, I think it's just saying this isn't good enough. I can't be this – you know, like, I'm decent, but I can't – decent's not going to work. And, you know, like you had mentioned, you can't get Garnett if you didn't have Ray Allen in place. So that's why he needs a superstar, because I don't think he wants the superstar. He wants the guy the superstar is going to get him.
So now we're going redux here with your Boston history. So you're saying that Garnett would not have gone to Boston if Ray Allen wasn't there?
Pretty much. That was the case, is he went there because they had – it just wasn't, you know, Pierce –
that's interesting.
Garnett in the cupboard being bare like it was in Minnesota. It was the fact there was that third Ray Allen there.
Yeah, and people have to remember back then, Rondo was a second-year player. Nobody knew who he was, you know?
Yeah, he was just a rookie. And
yeah, Al Jefferson was the one that people kind of liked because he had actually had a decent season on a really horrible Celtics team.
Well, he was the centerpiece of the trade on the way back. You know, him, Gerald Green, Ryan Gomes, and another Telfair and assorted fodder there, but... You know, it was – if you didn't have piece number two, piece number three wouldn't be the same thing. You know, I can't say the Warriors because they just drafted all their players. But you see, like – I don't know. But, yeah, you just – Love went there because LeBron was there. And if LeBron wasn't there, he wouldn't even give a thought of going to Minnesota. Going to Cleveland.
Let's go with Cupid's Arrow is this one that you and I called – and the idea here is give me something or like a team or a player or anything that you love in the NBA that nobody else is loving.
Well, a team I like and I always just stay high on is Denver. They hit the implosion button. They got rid of Aflalo. They got rid of Lawson. And all they had is Gallinari coming off all these injuries. And they put together this super competitive team, and then – in this era of, well, we need to go small ball, you have Nurkic, Jokic, and Jeffrey LaVerne, who are all 6'11".
And they're all playing.
Yeah. And they're going this old school system, and, you know, Jokic and Nurkic are still, they're beasts. And like, well, how did Jokic fall like the 41st pick last year in the 2014 draft? And they, you know, Moutier, I still, I could even just boil it down to him. I watch him. It's like, okay, he will be good. But
his analytic numbers are god awful. You and I have talked about that before.
Yeah, we said the same thing about Austin Rivers. Was his analytics are terrible. He looks like the worst player of all time. And I don't want the same thing to happen to him, but it's like, well, I think he could turn around.
No, I see enough with Moutier where, you know, he might turn a corner. You know, with Austin Rivers in New Orleans when he was here, you and I were talking about that. That had no hope. I watched that. I was like, oh, this guy's a bust. You know, I don't think Emmanuel Moutier is a bust. It's too early to say that.
Not according to analytics. Analytics have already wiped him off, and we just, you know, we spent 5 minutes on how the league's all analytical now.
Yeah.
So.
But why is everybody else not in love with the Nuggets yet? What's the reason? Because they're bad?
Because they're terrible, and, you know, you are playing Moutier, who's third lowest stat here, and horrible in that, and they have nobody, and, you know, the team has been overachieving this year, I think, and, you know, everybody has sailed on the Bucks wagon. The wheels came off of that. Mm-hmm. But, and I just, you know, I'm like, this is a team. They didn't have to take 5 years like Orlando did and 4 years like Utah did.
For me, it's still Victor Oladipo with the Orlando Magic. And it just seems like everybody has already given up on him because of the fact that Fournier took a lot of his minutes away when Scott Skiles took over, and Fournier, you know, has played really, really well. He's just a little bit of a better fit as like a guard there, and you know his minutes are still there. He just had a 37-point game, but if you look at it, 15 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, it's almost exactly the same numbers that he had when he was a rookie, you know, and the steals are about the same. His field goal percentage is kind of similar. A lot of people feel like Oladipo is a guy who he is what he is. He's never going to get better than he is. But I'm still holding out hope that with the athleticism, the ability to play some defense, you know, that he can become a very good guard. And here's where I disagree with a lot of people. I think it can work in Orlando.
Well, that's the thing is, like, when they got him, he was sort of all they had, and
well, he was the number two pick.
Yeah, he was the team, and they, like, you know, you're our future, and then the team sort of drastically changed around him. Where you had, you know, you have Gordon, you have Tobias Harris getting
Vucevic
tossed in your lap.
Yeah.
And, yeah, a lot of these players got better, which we didn't sort of expect, and they sort of meshed outside of him. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, at first, where he was supposed to be the centerpiece, the team sort of developed over there.
And that was under Jacques Vaughn, who couldn't coach a lick.
Yeah, and we're seeing that more and more, how horrible he really was. And even though Skiles, you know, that team has imploded and had a really horrible January, and like we're like one in whatever, but I think overall, you know, the team, you know, I don't know, is he a max player in your mind?
No, I don't think he's a max player. So I think I may have said that in the past on this show, and I'll probably have to backtrack on that one. I would say he's probably, even with the new money, I would say he's like about a $16 million a year guy. I think he's a guy who can be like your second best guard. But the problem for Orlando is that I think he is their best guard, but they're looking for something more. You know, and Elfrid Payton is still trying to develop, even though I knew he was going to be a project from the start because I knew he couldn't shoot coming out of ULL. And then Fournier came in, kind of took a lot of minutes from him because Skiles. I'm not really sure what was going on there. I guess Fournier just gives them a little bit more offensive punch as a shooter than Oladipo does. But I feel like Oladipo has the ability to explode on offense. You know, he just doesn't do it consistently enough.
Yeah, he's good. It's just, you know, once you pay him, now, you know, you're running out of money slowly because you just gave
got Vucevic, you got Harris, and then
you're giving money to people now.
Yeah, and I understand that scenario because when you have a young team like that, you might want the flexibility, you know, to move people around. So I do understand that. But, you know, a lot of people are saying that Oladipo is going to get traded, you know.
Yeah, but they could get a ton of value for him, so it's not like you'd sell low on him.
I don't know. I want. I just he's the one guy that I watch, and I really, really want him to do well. Maybe it's because I really liked him in college. You know, I saw a lot of potential in him, and I'm just holding out hope. You know, maybe I'm like one of those GMs who sees like a bad project and says, I think he still has potential, even though he's totally squandered every chance he's had. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go in for this one. And you and I might have some funny answers here. Who should buy the most expensive bouquet on the table for somebody else this year?
Who should buy the most expensive bouquet?
Which player or team or coach or city should be over the moon for what they have and show and give some kind of appreciation to that person?
The player who should be the most thankful, I think, would be Tyson Chandler and Omar Ashik. You know, thanks for giving us all that money. You know,
thanks a lot.
I'm 35 and I'm falling apart and I can't provide anything to your Phoenix team, but thanks for bringing me in thinking you know, this was all a crapshoot to get LaMarcus Aldridge.
Ashik's re-signing, is that one of the worst ever?
Because the thing is, we liked it when it happened.
It was like, we thought it was kind of high. Was it $11 million?
Yeah.
In that vicinity, 3 years?
5 years, 4 years.
Mm.
With a player option at the end.
Oh, no. But, and then Tyson Chandler, you know, it didn't look awful because you thought that Chandler could be that kind of veteran leader like he was in New York, you know, in the early part and then in Dallas.
It didn't look awful now, but it just looked awful. Like, you're going to pay him 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why? He's not going to be good at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's a tough one. For me, maybe C.J. McCollum should give something to LaMarcus Aldridge. Because McCollum, let's be honest. Now, McCollum had that really good game against Memphis right in there when they got eliminated in the playoffs, and LaMarcus Aldridge was still there. Lillard was kind of a little banged up, I believe, going into that playoff. And LaMarcus leaves. Nick Batum is traded. Wes Matthews leaves, you know, even though he was hurt anyway. And they blow up the whole team after LaMarcus's departure. Now, if LaMarcus Aldridge stays, does everybody else stay?
I would think so.
So you would try to hold the fort, and C.J. McCollum would just be a decent sixth man or a super sub or something like that behind Lillard under a team that's kind of built around Aldridge. Now you have this Blazers team where they were forced to give McCollum a lot of minutes, and lo and behold, C.J. McCollum is a star.
Who knew?
Well, I mean, did you kind of see that coming in Portland with McCollum, or were you still pretty?
No, he hadn't really showed anything, I thought, to this point.
I mean,
he was so buried.
Yeah, it was a surprise. I will say that. I saw him at Lehigh, but there are really good guards in college everywhere. You know, schools.
Yeah, you know, you're behind Wesley Matthews, and then they traded for a Aflalo. So when Matthews went down, you still had a Aflalo there, and it was just like, well.
And then Aflalo goes to the Knicks, and you're like, oh shit, now we got to play a McCollum. And then he just dished out a 20-point, 3-rebound, 4-assist season, which is insane for a 6'4 guard. The funny thing about McCollum and Lillard is that they both play very similarly, but they can coexist on the court together.
Yeah,
it's like the opposite of Bledsoe and Knight.
Well, yeah, that's the opposite, but at the same time, you know, Al-Farouq Aminu is just useless there now. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really provide anything. You just look at him and like, I watch the game. It's like, well, you gave him $20 million, so he's buying a nice bouquet, but he's not.
Wasn't he like the first signing they made?
He was their 3-and-D guy who doesn't really play D or shoot threes.
I bet it was like a tentative offer that they threw out there just to see if he would take it. And Al-Farouq Aminu was like, yes, I'll take that.
We'll start a bidding war and we'll try to get Dallas to re-sign him, and it's just like, nope.
Now McCollum should be sending it to LaMarcus because, you know, if LaMarcus doesn't leave, none of this happens for McCollum. But do you think there was a little bit of seediness there underneath between Lillard and Aldridge, where there may have been a little bit of fight for power, and the fact that Lillard is sort of the main man there now that LaMarcus is gone?
Well, that's basically what it was. You know, Lillard said, I want this to be my team, and then everybody left. It's like, okay, well, now there's your team. I hope you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like Portland's overachieving?
No, not really, because the bottom of the West is really, the basement sort of flooded.
Mm-hmm.
the strong eight seed of, you know, New Orleans will be better and Houston, and, you know, it's just sort of, well, the bottom, the 7 and 8 seeds, anything below that is just sort of wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're right above, you know, nobody thought they'd be as bad as Minnesota, and they were just above that terrible line of Denver, Minnesota, Phoenix, and, well, not, nobody thought Phoenix would be that bad, but, you know, above the terrible line, so sort of that 10 to 12 range, and, you know, they're sort of, okay, they're at 8, so.
The one thing I'll say about LaMarcus Aldridge before we get out of there is that the one thing is his stint with Portland was actually, the fact that he had two different coaches and they played two different styles, I think that was a blessing for him before he got to San Antonio. Because if you remember, when he was drafted, he played for quite a while and he was very successful, reached an all-star game under Nate McMillan. And Nate McMillan played very slow. They were defensively driven, and he was the big man. He had to play to the post, back to the basket, all that jazz. Then Terry Stotts gets there. They're a little more offensively minded. And he's still a back-to-the-basket type of power forward, but they push it a little more with Lillard, and his offense goes up, and they rely on him more to do more than just rebound. He becomes a 23, 24-point-per-game scorer. And I think for him before he got to San Antonio, I think that was good for him. Because now, if you watch San Antonio, they're one of these teams that likes to change their styles on the fly. You know, and for him to be able to play slow and fast, I think he needed to have those different experiences in Portland before he got to San Antonio.
Well, I'd also say that, and he's also 30 now, as opposed to, let's say he went 4 years ago where he was younger and, you know, might have had the attitude, and, oh, I could be the star of the team. Now he, you know, knows, look, I'm just going to be a piece.
Yeah, and I say that because I was watching him play my Pelicans in San Antonio. He scored 36 points, and Duncan's been out with some knee problems, knee soreness, I guess. They also call it old age. But but the truth is, it was the first time, Adam, that I really felt like, okay, LaMarcus Aldridge really fits here. You know, this is working.
Yeah, because they tried. It's not like, you know, certain teams where, okay, you're a big talent, come in, you're good. And they're like, no. Because we saw the beginning of the season where it looked awkward as hell.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, let's refine it. Let's tune it up. Okay, now, as opposed to just, well, go out there. You're paid. You're a superstar. You're an all-star. Go be, you know, play like one.
Well, and they started out playing super slow. They were taking a lot of threes. I think they've picked up the pace just a little bit more. Defensively, LaMarcus is having a great year. Oh, and so is Duncan. You know, and I think that's a big part of it, too, that LaMarcus learned how to play defense under Nate, but he also learned how to score if they speed things up under Stotts. I think that was a big deal. The other thing, the next category is give me something that you've fallen, that needs to fall out of love, something that is, that's bound together that you think needs to be split apart. So I know we're doing a lot of positive things, but we need to go to a little bit negative here.
Well, it's not negative. It's just
a bond, a couple that you just think is not working.
It's the fascination with the freshmen. The last three draft classes have been all.
You mean the green room guys?
Yeah, they were all supposed to be the one and doneers.
Mm-hmm.
They're the new future of the NBA. And you watch them, it's just like, well, none of them know how to play. They don't play defense. They all just want to take the shot. They have no system. They all, you know, Kobe called them all spoiled brats. And. Mm-hmm. You just, it's just like, okay, maybe, you know, this draft was supposed to be awesome, and then there's literally, I wouldn't say it's a two-person draft anymore, because Ingram has sort of slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
He's not as good as we thought he was.
To me, that's a one-person draft.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be.
It's Ben Simmons and everybody else.
It was supposed to be so.
So everyone's like, so ESPN has promoted the shit out of this with green room guys that can go to the NBA lottery, which is obviously like a, just a way of merging the NBA audience with the NCAA audience. And I know Roy Williams had a press conference where he was bashing the crap out of it. And I'm sort of with him on it. But what I hate about it is that there's only one green room guy in this whole fucking thing, and that's Ben Simmons.
Yep, and beyond that, you know, Chris Dunn, he's worked his way up to he's a third and fourth right now. And it's like, well, he's not.
His shooting is not great. You know,
he's not that great, and to be the third best prospect, and even supposed to be a knock on him because he's a junior.
And this is not a knock on Chris Dunn. He's had a great junior year at Providence, okay? But if he is like your de facto best point guard and there's not even a competition there type of player, then that means you've got a weak field.
Yeah, it's not his fault this year's crop and just NCAA as a whole.
There's Jamal Murray, but you and I have talked about this over and over, the guy from Canada who plays a good time. He's a two. That's a two.
He's a two, and I just watch him, and it's just like he's making terrible shots, and they're asking him to do too much because that team is just fatally flawed.
And what about – oh, go ahead.
It's just, you know, I'm falling out of love with the obsession of we need to get these guys who aren't going to prove anything. So now we're just overpaying players, I think, you know, role players, you know, 5-6 year players because our freshmen aren't ready to come in and do anything for 3 years.
It's almost a point with the one and doneers where you don't, you can't develop them based on what they learned. You almost have to make them unlearn the bad habits that they learned there in college and in AAU. And that's discouraging. You know, there's some rare, and the rare examples of those are the one and doneers that come out and play great from the start. Carl Anthony Towns is a guy that, you know, through John Calipari, he learned how to play defense, block shots, and make a mid-range jump shot. And if you watch Carl Anthony Towns in Minnesota, that's what he does. And he does it really, really well. He's probably going to win Rookie of the Year. Okafor, I think he developed a couple of bad habits at Duke. You know, and I think it's kind of showing in Philadelphia that he's sort of relying on the same things that worked in college at, or in high school. That doesn't really fly in the NBA. You know, and in college this year, same thing. You watch Brandon Ingram, all he does is take threes. You watch Ben Simmons, he's not aggressive. His coach doesn't push him. Well, guess what you're going to have to do in the NBA? You're going to have to do those things.
Exactly, and, you know, it's just the fascination. We need to get these guys. Well, they're not going to provide anything, and they just wind up sitting at the end of your bench.
Exactly.
So that's what I've, you know, fallen out of love with was the potential that these kids can give us.
Are there any one-and-doners from this current season that you've fallen out of love with yet?
Scal Labissiere.
Let's even go farther. What about the rookies this year? You know, I'll give you a few. There's Moutier, who we talked about. There's Stanley Johnson in Detroit. There's Devin Booker in Phoenix. There's Willie Cauley-Stein in Sacramento. Justice Winslow at Duke. D'Angelo Russell in Ohio State. Miles Turner. Bobby Portis was actually a second-year player, so he doesn't count.
Yeah, but they're developing. They're slowly. Portis, you know, I've been extremely high on. Mm-hmm. And it's just, well, you look at him, he's still raw. All he knows is just, I need to dunk and be rebound. Okay, good. You have the intensity. You have the hustle. But then you see players, you know, Trey Lyles in Utah. He hasn't done. He's been buried in the bench. Booker,
he's playing a little more, but not a lot. But he's only playing a lot because I think there was an injury to
D'Angelo Russell has looked the same last week as he did from day one. He hasn't improved one bit.
I'm going to tell you, Adam, I'm really not sure about D'Angelo Russell.
But these players were all billed as they're going to come in. They will all be, you know, LeBron 2.0, Westbrook 2.0 on day one. And it's just, well, none of them are sort of showing it.
I'll tell you this. There's only one Russell Westbrook. I think that eventually we'll have another LeBron. I think eventually we'll have another Durant, a 6'9" or 6'8", like a 6'8" point forward who can score and a 6'9" guard who can shoot from anywhere. But I think there's only one Russell Westbrook. You'll never see a point guard as athletic as he is.
You know, like, oh, Wiggins was supposed to be literally the next Trace McGrady right off the bat. And, well, now people are calling him a bust because he's not that right now.
But here's the funny part. If you look at the trajectory, his numbers are actually better than what McGrady's were his second year.
Well, you forget, like, he's just 20. I don't even think he's 21 yet. It's like, well, these kids are super young. Like, we're, you know, Austin Rivers has been written off, and I think he's only 23 or 22. Mm-hmm. He's, like, you know, younger than the seniors and the...
He was actually not playing too badly the last month before he broke his hand.
You know, that's the thing. It's just the kids are just younger and younger. It's like, well, you know, why are you giving up on them? Well, they're already 22 and done. It's because, well, you can't. You're not going to. You'll be saying you've lost the locker room and kids don't respond to you. So you're out of the, you know, you're fired.
Mine's a little more specific. that I've fallen out of love with, I hate the fact that the Washington Wizards are trying to play fast. You know, I just talked about how I love pace and space and how, you know, a lot of teams have adopted the quicker speed of you know, trying to get either to the lane or, you know, four out, one in with the three-point shooters. And, you know, and it's creating a lot more back and forth in transition, and I think that's great. But for the Wizards, with the makeup of that team, it just doesn't work. And they've been trying to play fast. Their offense is middle of the pack. They have one of the worst defenses in the league. I just watched them give up like 130 points at home to the Warriors. The Curry dropped 50 on them. And John Wall's numbers are looking better because of it. Bradley Beal's numbers are looking better because of it before he becomes a restricted free agent. But man, it's such a bad fit for Nene. It's a bad fit for Marcin Gortat. Randy Whitman, this is one situation I think where the coach is in the right, where the coach needs to pull the reins back and say, okay, we're going to slow down, we're going to play defense, and we're going to try to make teams play at our pace.
Well, the problem has been Whitman is he doesn't seem to care, and it's just like, eh, do whatever. Mm-hmm. He's been so wishy-washy that you see it every year where they have no definitive thing. And, you know, Gortat is still good. He's putting up, you know, he's putting up like career highs there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, upper top. Like,
yeah, but
Phoenix
it's not
numbers.
A good fit. Here's the thing. It's like when he was in Phoenix that couple of years with Steve Nash. It's just not a good fit there, you know?
It's not a good fit, but at the same time, it's like they're trying to capture that 20 minutes you have Bradley Beal on the court because he can't play a full game anymore already. And you try to extend that to 48 minutes. Like, no, you can't. You have no bench. You have no depth. And you have no wings. And you're just trying to capture lightning in a bottle this 1 minute. And you're trying to extend it for 48. It's not going to work.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Their bench isn't great. You know, you got, like, Garrett Temple and Otto Porter Jr., who's kind of their de facto small forward at times. And the other one that I'm thinking of that they have in the bench is Gary Neal. That's not the kind of team that's equipped to play fast. If you want to play fast, you need a little bit of depth. That's what makes the Warriors work. They have the depth to do it. You know, even the Oklahoma City Thunder, who gets criticized for the fact that they haven't surrounded Durant and Westbrook with really great players. The fact is, they've got a lot of players in a lot of different positions, so they can run these guys out with Durant and Westbrook, you know, and be able to keep rotating them in and out. The Warriors do the same thing. They just have better players, you know, with better fits. Washington has no fits in that system. None.
Yeah, yeah. You have no bench. There's nothing you can do.
Exactly. And it's just like now you're really wearing down Wall. That's my scare, that they're wearing down John Wall. He's having great numbers this year, but I feel like he's working at a pace that he's not.
You're going to burn him out 2 years too early.
Well, he plays so fast. Like, do you really want him to do that every single game and risk an injury?
Nope, but unfortunately.
Is John Wall the quickest guard in the league, or is it Ish Smith? Or
I think it
maybe
might be
somebody
Ish
else.
Smith. I would still say Ish Smith is the quickest. And
he is fast. I remember watching. I saw a highlight when he got moved to Philadelphia, and he is super quick, dude.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's go with a couple of combinations, like one person or one thing and another person and another thing. And we'll talk about which one should send a Valentine's card or an I love you card to the other, okay? Dwight Howard and any team except for the Houston Rockets. Who should be the one sending the love note?
I think Dwight Howard just anonymously sent them to himself. You know, like that one girl in the office. Oh man, who sent me flowers? Oh, is it you? Was it you? Was it you? You know,
and everyone's looking at each other like, you seriously didn't send him flowers, did you?
Yeah, you wound up just buying them for yourself because, you know, we all like Dwight. He all has his, you know, he's a beast when he needs to, but he's breaking down. And the fact that Houston is, you know, taking calls on him and. Mm-hmm. The fact that he might be wearing out his welcome there too, and they play, you know, play better at without him, and they might have found the next guy in Capella. You know, it's sort of the, you know, your career didn't go as you thought it would.
You know, the funny part though about Houston, if say for example Dwight leaves in free agency in the summer, I can't call his tenure in Houston a failure.
Well, you can't call it a success.
it's tough because it's right in between. Because did they get to the Western Conference Finals with Dwight? Yes. So, and they weren't able to do that under Steve Francis. They weren't able to do it Tracy McGrady and Yao Ming. They weren't able to do it Ron Artest. You know, they weren't even able to do it without Dwight when James Harden first got moved there. So for Daryl Morey, he had his best success when he got Dwight. You know, so was it a success in terms of like winning a championship? No. But I can't call it an outright failure. Just because Kevin McHale got fired doesn't mean it was a failure.
It wasn't a failure, but we all know they got there because of the implosion. They didn't get there because they earned it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get there because they overachieved. They somehow stumbled back and luckily got into the finals.
This one has origins from the Vertical podcast, which is actually another decent podcast. From Adrian Wojnarowski, who everybody knows is one of the best NBA beat writers on the internet through Yahoo. And then he spread this rumor out. Kevin Durant and the Golden State Warriors. Who should send the love notes?
Nobody. The Warriors would probably send more to Durant than Durant would to them.
I think Russell Westbrook, this is what I think it's going to happen. I think Russell Westbrook should write one of Durant pretending to be the Warriors.
Why? So Westbrook can have the team to himself?
Pull a Damian Lillard. Yeah.
Have the team to himself and the team would just be horrible as they were with him. And
Russell Westbrook would never accept being on a bad team. He's one of those kinds of players.
Yeah, but, you know, we saw how they were when Durant was out for the year, most of it.
Yeah,
that team was not good.
We said the same thing about Kobe when Shaq got hurt and they struggled. And then about a year or two after... Well, he got Pau Gasol, so you might be right.
Yeah, and Pau Gasol is grossly underrated on that Lakers team.
Oh, my God. Didn't he get just, like, a year before, didn't they just win the gold medal in Spain?
Yep.
Or not the gold medal. They won the FIBA World Championships. Yeah. And Memphis thought he was washed, like, not washed up, but they thought that he wouldn't come back from his leg injury. And so they moved him for Kwame Brown and... the rights to Marc Gasol, which actually turned out to be a really nice deal at the end of the day. But, man, in the short term, boy, that looked like the most one-sided trade of all time.
Yeah, that looked like a scam for Javaris Crittenden and...
A convicted murderer.
Yeah, to Crittenden and the rights to Marc Gasol. Just, yeah, that was the trade. You know, the Chris Paul trade would have gone through had not they had this fleecing with Pau Gasol.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that was like, okay, we'll give you one lopsided trade, but when you pull two, now we need to sort of pull the button of, you know, giving garbage for...
That was the move that really changed history, the Chris Paul veto. I mean, the move that didn't happen, you know what I'm saying? If Chris Paul goes to the Lakers, man, everything changes.
Yeah, and it was just like, well, no, you can't, that's not competitive fairness of getting two really bad trade, one-sided trades. And
the funny part, though, is that I don't think Paul and Kobe would have been a good fit anyway.
Well, nobody's a good fit with Kobe.
Exactly. I mean, I can't believe Gasol even pulled it off, to be honest with you.
Because Gasol's not the player who needs the shots. He's just the one who will get them and, you know, do the hustle rebounding and just get what he needs.
Oh, by the way, we didn't mention this one in the last episode. Was Gasol an all-star snub? He's still averaging double-digit rebounds.
Is he an all-star snub? Yeah, but is he a... of all time, no. Mm-hmm. You know, is it... You know, you get it. There's players who give good ones. And, well, who are you going to take out for him? That's the question. Is did somebody get in who really didn't deserve it? Did, you know, who was the last one?
The only one you can cherry pick from the West... Well, no, actually, that's the East. In the West, it would... A lot of people said Aldridge because the Spurs picked the coach. Well, it wasn't the Spurs, but the fact that, you know, Pop was coaching the team and LaMarcus made the team. A lot of people said, oh, you see? You know, they wanted Aldridge on that team. But, defensively, Aldridge has been so great that I can make the justification that he deserved it. In the East, man, I have...
Like, who are you going to take? Are you going to take it away from Isaiah Thomas?
No.
You're taking away from John Wall.
Isaiah Thomas would be the one that you would have to take out.
But, yeah, and you're not taking him out.
Well, you're not taking him out.
You take him out?
We're about to have some fisticuffs here. No, I wouldn't. I can't do that with Isaiah. You know, at 18 points a game, being the star player of a team that a team that really shouldn't be at this ranking that they are. You know, they're overachieving. You know, he's the head of that monster.
Yeah, they're overachieving. So, like, he's 5'9" and doing, you know, putting up these crazy numbers.
And he's and I think he's their most efficient player too, which is big.
You know, and if he were 6 foot, if he were like 6'1", you know, the undersized Kemba Walker, no, he wouldn't get recognition for it. It's just the fact that he's so tiny, you know, and had to work so hard to get it. You know, he's, you know, Gasol missed it, but same time, who are you taking out?
Here's two All-Stars, and they're on the same team. And this is actually a pretty interesting one because it's kind of like a, like almost like a Shaq Kobe situation of who gets more credit. Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan.
Who should send flowers to the other person?
Yeah.
I think DeRozan should send it to Lowry, saying thanks for losing all that weight, making us good again. Because he just could have came back heavy and slow, and, you know, Lowry has really made DeRozan better.
I feel the opposite. I think DeRozan has made Lowry better. I think without DeRozan, Lowry is simply a good player on a bad team. Without Lowry, I think DeRozan is a good player on a good team. Now, here's the thing. Who's the alpha male on this team? I think it's kind of like, I think it's a situation where they've both accepted the fact that they're leaders, but one is not ahead of the other.
I think they've accepted it, but DeRozan isn't as happy with it as Lowry is.
Do you think it has a lot to do with the fact that he has the contract coming up and Lowry's years are longer on his extension?
Yeah, that's what I think a lot of it has to come down with.
But, you know, they say the same thing about Curry with his contract being so low when he signed his extension before he broke out. And a lot of people say, well, you know, there are sources that say he's secretly jealous that everyone makes more money than him and he might leave and all this stuff.
How is he jealous with, like, a $200 million Under Armour shoe deal?
Well, the fact is, Derrick Rose is making $20 million, and he's got his gigantic deal from Adidas.
Yeah, but now, you know, Adidas isn't getting much money off that, are they?
Well, I'll tell you what, he gets a lot of promotions, because every time I watch Derrick Rose, and he's had some good games lately, every time I watch him play, it looks like a fucking football player. He looks like a wide receiver. He's got like 25 things of gear on. Next time, he's going to be wearing it. Well, he already wore a mask, right?
He's just going to go with a suit of armor trying not to fall apart.
He broke the orbital bone. So, yeah, it's like it's like a man of mystery. You know, Lowry lost the weight in the offseason. And a lot of people say that, but for him, it definitely showed and it definitely made an improvement with his game. But with DeRozan at the wings, at the wing position, the fact that he can play shooting guard, which is one of the weaker positions in the NBA right now, I think the fact that he's so valuable there is big, whereas with Kyle Lowry, you can find good point guards anywhere.
You used to be able to, but now I think, you know.
Oh, you think it's starting to crest
a little bit? I think it's over. With these three-week drafts, and you don't see any coming up this year.
Oh, don't you say it. Don't say the point guard golden era is over.
I'm not saying it's over. I'm just saying we've reached the crest where we have a lot of teams with the good point guards and.
So you think those small forwards that we were ranking are the next ones?
That's the way it seems to be going.
Or you think the centers are going to come back?
Well, it depends what you define as a center. Is, you know, the Anthony Towns is super dominant. Is he a center?
I think the point forwards are going to start to surge. I think that's the new thing. Forwards that can run the offense. The Ben Simmonses of the world.
Now, I think the way to look at the way this season has gone is more of a combo guards.
Mm-hmm.
The 6'5", you know, Jamal Murray's, where, okay, are you a point guard or are you a shooter? Well, we can sort of do everything decently.
So, yeah, if we have to interchange and have the point guard play off the ball, we can do that too. Yeah. Like mismatches. Yeah. Makes sense.
The CJ McCollum, Lillard, you know.
I still don't know how that works, but it somehow does. Blake Griffin and the Clippers. Now, this one's kind of gained some controversy over the last month with him breaking his hand after he punched an equipment manager, and then he had to go in for a second surgery. You know, a lot of people are talking that, you know, Doc Rivers issued a statement saying that this behavior was not going to be accepted. But, I mean, what's the likelihood that Blake Griffin is going to get traded? So who should be saying, let's change this from an I love you note to an I'm sorry note? Who should be sending the note?
Oh, it should be Blake Griffin. because it was just, you know, it was an incredible bonehead move. But, you know, don't forget, he was one of the beloved stars of the NBA in commercials and,
He still doing Kia and all that stuff.
Yeah, he is, but how really marketable anymore if you have, you know, we don't know what happened here. The story is just extremely odd and, you know.
Well, he punched. He did it twice. He did it in the restaurant, and then he punched him outside the restaurant, which makes me think that they got into an argument at the table, and then they took it outside, and then he punched him again.
Yeah, so that's why there's something's up, and you know, it hurts that, you know, that clean cut, you know, funny boy image he's been trying to portray.
Well, he also had that kind of prevailing image that he was a wuss, that he couldn't take verbal jousting.
Yeah, that fake, you know.
The fake toughness.
Yeah, the fake toughness.
Yeah, he was a little bit of a fake tough guy, I can't lie. You know, and Blake Griffin is such a great offensive player. And defensively, he's pretty good, too. So, you know, I made the argument during the postseason last year, I wouldn't have taken any player over Blake Griffin. You know, he was playing that well. So, you know, he's a guy that's indispensable for the Clippers, even though they – and here's the other part of it that's made it a little bit more of a controversy, more of a debate, is that the Clippers have played well without him. You know, do you now that's a very that's a small sample size. It's only been about 15 games, but do you think that's enough for people to say, "Well, you see, they can live without him"?
Yeah, sometimes less is more. You know, you remove that, you know, you remove that spacing, and then all of a sudden, you just become more of a team, as opposed to just being, you know.
Oh, so you're going all in with get Blake out of here?
No, I'm not going all in with get Blake out of here. I'm going with, you know, I think Blake needs to work on his image as opposed to being that damaged goods than the Clippers do right now.
Okay, so that's going to probably be finishing up this episode. I hope everybody's got a little bit of love in the air as we were talking about with this show. Is there any more appreciation that you have for our fans or for anything else before the show is over, Adam, now that we've...
I say it every week. I'm amazed anybody listens to this. I'm amazed, you know, I thought it'd be like, oh, we'd have like 50 listeners who just, you know, clicked on it by accident. The fact that people actually, you know, tune in, I'm grateful for.
I think half of them are by accident, to be honest with you.
A click is a click. I'll just, you know, let me have my little delusions.
And speaking of clicks, like we just said, click if you need to buy anything for your significant other, click on the Amazon link through placebnation.com, please. Little bit, any little bit can help for us. Any little bit can help. If you want to buy anything, you want to buy Space Jam, which I just, can you believe this? My daughter got to watch Space Jam in class.
Times are changing.
I never got to watch Space Jam in class. Well, you know why? Because I was in high school by then.
Yeah, why would you want to?
Because Space Jam is like the best movie ever.
Yeah, but you're a little old for that.
Well, it's either... Well, I remember in grade school, I watched The Air... Do you remember The Air Up There with Kevin Bacon? He's like an agent, he finds a basketball player in Africa.
Yeah, I remember the story, but I didn't watch it. We didn't watch that in school.
I'm trying to think of all the shitty movies now. Juana Man, Like Mike with a little what? Little Bow Wow was his name?
Yeah.
Little Bow Wow. And, The Sixth Man with Marlon Wayans, where his brother is a ghost.
Yeah, well, let's just not get into bad basketball movies, man.
Well, I love bad basketball movies, so. All right, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reese. Take care, guys.